Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Tuesday, we got to talk to USC Trojan football. Looks like the Trojans are going to be playing this weekend on a Sunday. Not Sunday night, not Sunday morning. Sunday afternoon, I guess you could say. 4:30 p.m. Pacific time on FS1, taking on the Washington State Cougars. We're going to talk about that and what transpired to get to this point where the Trojans are actually going to be playing a football game Sunday late afternoon with Keila Yore. Follow her on Twitter at my name. If you have any questions for the show, you can email us podcast at uscfootball.com or call or text us at 424-254-9141. And if you can subscribe on the Apple Podcasting app anywhere, we really would appreciate that. Leave us a 5-star rating, some kind of positive review with any comments, feedbacks, or suggestions you have. That really does help us out as well. We'd love to hear from you there. And it helps to grow the show as the most popular podcasting app out there. And if you have any questions, you want to put them on the podcasting Apple Podcast, we'll put you right to the top of the show. And as always, at the top of the show, we got to talk to Keila Yore. Keila, how are you doing today?
Hello, hello, Ryan. Doing well. Just trying to make sense of everything that happened over last week and getting back into previewing an opponent, even though that seems kind of weird hearing Clay Hilton talk this morning about Washington State. I'm like, okay, here we go. Maybe it might happen, but I'm waiting until we actually see football on Sunday. It's fun saying Sunday, though.
It did say it's Sunday. Like, oh, who's USC playing this Saturday? Nope, playing Sunday. Mm-hmm. During the NFL stuff, it's sort of like the afternoon games end and a little before the Sunday night game starts. So you get maybe there's a little window there that you would have exclusive football for maybe an hour. I don't think it's a great Sunday night game or whatever. I don't remember exactly what it was. But, yeah, hey. USC football on a Sunday afternoon, late afternoon. That's kind of special. You don't get that very often.
Yeah, I think they originally had it scheduled for 6, and then a window came open at Fox to move it up, and USC was like, we'll take it. And I think they're excited that they will be in that window, like you talked about, Ryan, between the afternoon games and the primetime game. So maybe more eyes on USC and Washington State. So who knows? But it'll be interesting to see the numbers just because – Maybe Sunday night Pac-12 football could be an option. I'm kidding, but I know they're excited about the fact that they'll have some eyes on the team.
Yeah, and they're just excited to be able to play the game. So we're going to talk about that, what it transpired to get to this point. I think we do have a new review there on the Apple Podcasting app.
We do. It is from Thomas Menendez, retired from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And he says, a 5-star's most reliable Trojan source. Great information about USC football. And he had a 5-star question, which is, why was Clemson able to play their football game when Trevor Lawrence was having signs of COVID and still travel with the team to Notre Dame, but USC can't play? Thanks, Tom Menendez.
Thanks, Tom. And that was a
Thomas,
weird one.
My bad.
Thomas, sorry.
Thomas, I don't know if he's formal, so I don't want to be disrespectful.
Well, Thomas, yeah, we don't want to be disrespectful. So that was really interesting to see him travel because that seemed completely unnecessary. And I don't know what the rule is there and how that would even be a thing. But to have a positive player traveling with your team, it just seems like you're inviting more close contact, more contact tracing, and mm-hmm. more issues. So, yeah, that definitely was a weird one. But all the conferences have kind of different guidelines and rules. The Big Ten actually has a 21-day quarantine period. And it's weird because you would have someone that tests positive for COVID. You could test out of it. If you test negative a couple times in a row, you're fine. But if you're in a quarantine situation, you can't test out of that. So you're out for X number of days. In the Pac-12 right now, it's 14. There is a lot of talk about from the CDC about changing that quarantine period because it does seem like it's longer than what's normally necessary, especially for kids in this kind of controlled environment. But I never heard Keeley how he was allowed to travel, but the contact tracing didn't wipe out a position group like it did at USC with Trevor Lawrence, but which that makes sense. Why is he traveling with the team did not make sense.
Yeah. Was he on the sideline too? I thought I saw a shot of him on the sideline. That makes zero sense to me. If he's going to do that, you might as well play him. Like, there's no, you need to keep him away. That's the whole point of isolating, but that's neither here nor there. But that's probably why, you know, at the beginning when the Power Five was trying to figure out, okay, what does football look like? Conference only was one of the things that came out, was because you have such different rules and regulations per conference and whatever, how strictly everyone wants to enforce their rules and the science behind it. So that's kind of why they separated, because you have the Pac-12, which is really strict. And part of the reason why people forget is it's definitely about the local jurisdictions, the guidances between state and local places. So that's why LA County is a hard place to be in, not as hard as Santa Clara, as we're seeing. But that's why USC and UCLA have different things than maybe Washington and Washington State. It's all about, you know, the ordinances that supersede whatever conference may say, you know. So it's complicated, and that's why the Pac-12 was better off going by their own way, because then they can manage their governments in some way or shape or form, rather than trying to coordinate it with a Notre Dame or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So, and what we're seeing, what Notre Dame was able to do, they've basically shifted, the ACC shifted the schedule. Wake Forest was supposed to play Notre Dame on December 12th. They're not going to play Louisville. Florida State's not going to make up their game with Clemson. They're essentially shutting it down. They're not going to be playing the rescheduled games. And they're kind of cutting those two teams off in Miami after 9 league games. And, you know, that's I looks like they're protecting those programs. So that's a kind of an interesting schedule aspect of what's going on in the ACC. I still don't understand why you would have a positive player, even as, you know, Trevor Lawrence type guy, travel with the team. I don't see the upside in doing that at all. But this is, you know, college football could be a regional sport, and the way the virus is handled is certainly regional. Sometimes it differs by state. We're seeing fans in stands and other places. We're seeing Stanford need to, you know, have their game go from Palo Alto or, you know, to Stanford, California, in Santa Clara County to Corvallis, because their local officials aren't going to let them play tackle football right now in that county for the next 3 weeks. So it's very regional, Keely. Like, it just depends where you are, what's going to be allowed.
Yeah. And I heard your little rant on the Harvey Hyde podcast about how Santa Clara doesn't make sense and making everyone move. It makes sense. Your rant does, at least. Why would you, if the outcome is going to be that these teams are moving to different regions, then your whole tackling ban, contact ban, makes no sense to begin with. So it doesn't make sense from a containing the spread point of view, if you know what I mean?
I first of all, Keely, I do appreciate that, because when I went on my rant, anytime you're talking about the virus, if you say something that's, you want to be more on the lenient side, let them do this or let them do that, you could have people are saying, you're not taking this seriously. You want to see grandma die. Like, they're get on you for saying anything that's not like lock everything down. And, you know, if you wanted to lock college football down, I would listen to the argument. Like, there's probably a pretty good argument that we shouldn't be playing at all, but we are. And I think knowing that they have this controlled environment, especially, you know, the 49ers, Stanford, they've tested players, you know, 8 days a week since July, and nobody's tested positive. So you have to trust that Stanford's doing a pretty good job of what they're doing. Now you're telling them to move out of state to play a game. You're basically, if the whole point is we don't want to spread the virus around, you're disrupting it. Like, you're kicking a beehive and then hoping that there's not going to be bees flying everywhere. And they're trying to protecting their own butts, it seems like, where, well, this is the way it's going to be for everyone, where you got to take into consideration, these are programs that have done this. They know what's going on. They're not a threat right now to everyone else in society, because they're doing such a good job controlling it themselves. Now you have a local government trying to influence that. But in actuality, you're now making the world and the country less safe because of what you're doing. So just because your intentions are good that we want to stop the virus, so we're going to shut things down. You've actually disrupted things. So it's the unintended consequences thing. So I'm glad, because I know you're someone that, you know, you take this very seriously, Keely. And, I think we all try to. We can be more lenient than others. But in my opinion, if you really want to keep the country safer, you would have let them continue what they were doing locally, as opposed to making them move out of state, which is going to disrupt a lot of things. And I think put more people at risk than just letting them play like they were doing.
Yeah, it just doesn't logically make sense. If you originally agreed to college football, which it sounds like they were, at least they agreed to it at some point, whether or not it was begrudgingly, I don't know, but you agreed to it. And this is a group who is testing every single day, who is probably testing more than the average population, who has an incentive to stay healthy. Yeah, way more. Who has an incentive to stay healthy, to really be strict on guidelines, and to be to adhere to every rule that not only the county has in place, but the school itself has in place. So why are you then punishing those who are trying to do the best that they can? You know what I mean? It just, if you agree to it, why are you now kind of taking back what you originally? I don't fully understand, Ryan, but you know that I am definitely pro keeping everyone safe, and it just didn't seem like the logical next step for me, but I don't know.
Yeah, we kind of get in that sometimes, where you have, if people's intentions are good, it doesn't mean the action that they're taking to try to make things better is the right thing. Even, you know, with the best intentions or whatever, the road to hell is paved with the, you know, best intentions, so whatever that saying is. I think we talked about this before. I think Santa Clara County, their intentions are they're trying to help, right? But the actions they're taking are actually going to hurt things, which, you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to blame people if you're doing something with the right mindset, like, hey, we really want to make things safer, we're going to do this, but you actually make things more unsafe. Then you're like, well, that's not the right thing. Like, you're not that's great that your intentions are good, but you're not doing something that's actually going to make things better. So we'll see what happens with Stanford. We'll see, obviously, USC and Washington State this weekend, both teams coming off forced COVID bye weeks, one for USC, two for Washington State. So we'll cross our fingers and hope they're able to safely play the game on Sunday night. It was kind of a long intro, I guess. But before we get into the more meat of the show, I already got some rants in. Keely praising me for rants, which is crazy. Maybe not praising, but, you know, approving of rants, which doesn't always happen, you know.
True.
Be on, you know, let me know. Hey, I don't agree with that one. I want to thank Trader Joe's, who've been our great sponsor. I mean, such a crazy year, and they've been awesome for us. Every time I go to Trader Joe's, it's just a great experience, which, you know, it's not always easy to go shopping. I was in Trader Joe's in Hermosa Beach yesterday and, you know, picked up a few of those Trader Jose beers because I was going to have some Mexican food for dinner. And those are, you know, it's a good compliment. But if you want to be a little festive, you got kids at home for the holidays, I found these, and I think they just came out the day I got them. They were just on the website yesterday. So I got lucky, and I found them on my own before I saw them on the website. Decked out tree cookies. So these are awesome-looking Christmas cookies. They have a Christmas tree. It's like a biscuit with chocolate in the middle and chocolate on the bottom, and it's drizzled with white frosting to look like garland on the trees and little the little sprinkles on top. They are really good. And it's only it's like 30 cents a cookie. It's like $2.49 for a pack of eight of these things. And if you just put them out on a plate for, you know, if you had, you know, a friend over or something, or, you know, socially distant, and you would have something nice to put out there, these are really good looking cookies and they taste great. So I just lucked into them, which is cool. When you go to Trader Joe's, you get to do stuff like that. So definitely check those out. They are great.
Very nice. I picked up my annual advent calendar, chocolate Trader Joe's advent calendar. So each day I get a little chocolate. So I think they're meant for kids too, Ryan, but I can't stop the tradition, you know, got to keep it going. So
when I was a kid, our advent calendar, I don't think we had little chocolates in there. I think I got to get one of those. That's cool.
You do. It's a nice little treat, and you're a sweet tooth, Ryan, so it makes sense.
100%. Yeah. And that would stop me from eating like, you know, a week's worth. I would have to like wait each day.
Yeah. Patience is a virtue.
I'm not saying I had three of those cookies of the eight, but maybe I did in one sitting. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, whatever works.
It happens. But yeah, go check those out at Trader Joe's. Let's see. So maybe we should go back. We were pretty optimistic on Wednesday. We Maybe we weren't as optimistic on Tuesday when we recorded the show, but on Wednesday, when we had our, we didn't do a television show, but like, I think things were pretty optimistic around the site USCFootball.com that the game was going to happen, that they were there were too many people in quarantine, they had two positives, but man, that third one comes out, it just kind of puts a damper on Thanksgiving. I don't know if you want to kind of go through what was going on there, Keely, because that was a rough day.
Yeah, there was a lot going on it. And part of the reason why we had that sense of things was because we had the war room that Thursday morning. So on Wednesday, we were asking around trying to get a sense of where things stood. And I got a sense from USC that they were pretty optimistic about where they were COVID-wise. They had a player show symptoms on Monday, woke up with symptoms on Monday. He isolated. So they thought they had that under control. They did a round of PCR tests. Another player popped up as a positive. He was asymptomatic. And then talking to sources on Wednesday, I think USC thought that they had a handle on the spread. They had people in quarantine. They thought they identified where it originated, how that happened. And it seemed like there was some sense of confidence, but I was warned, you know, the next 24 hours will be key for us. And so lo and behold, in the next 24 hours, you have another player pop up with symptoms. And when USC released that statement that said we had a player with symptoms and we're pausing practice, to me, knowing what I knew from just conversations that I had, I was like, this is very bad, you know, because for LA County, if you're in a non-medical setting, 3 positive tests is considered an outbreak in the eyes of LA County. And so that wouldn't have automatically canceled the game. Really hard for USC. So put yourself in USC's shoes. You now aren't really sure. You're not sure if you have a handle on, okay, are there more positives that are going to pop up? And now we have an outbreak in terms of LA County, and we have to talk to the county, but it's Thanksgiving. Like, there's not going to be people hanging around government buildings to be able to talk about, okay, what does our college football team do this weekend? You know, it was just a logistical nightmare from that sense. So they had to get a handle on things on Thursday, and it quickly was just like, they can't do the game. It's just not going to work. So they canceled the game. They had another positive happen on Friday. So now we're at 4 positives for USC and 7 in quarantine. And then Chris and I were able to break the news that USC is still trying to play Washington State, but they moved the original Friday game to Sunday. And the reason why that is so pivotal is because you get that initial group that was isolating and quarantining, you get them back because that their time frame will end on that Saturday. So then they will be free. They'll be out of quarantine prison, if you will, on Sunday. And so USC, for their part, is still trying to put the game on. But, you know, as I mentioned, on Wednesday, it felt positive from USC's perspective. And coming into this week, I definitely felt a different tone. There was definitely a more pessimistic view about it. About the game on Sunday, and that there's a long way to go. And I think part of it was just because they're not really sure when the spread happened, how it got transmitted. And I think what they're realizing this week is that you can have all the protocols in place on the football side of things, but at the end of the day, this is still a bubble. This is not a bubble, and there's going to be outside contact. You know, there's going to be players going to the grocery store. There's going to be other ways that you might have spread happen. And so you can't control everything no matter how hard you try. So I think that's why they're a little bit more pessimistic heading into Sunday. You know, there's a long way to get to there. So I think everyone at USC is kind of holding their breath and hoping they get through the next couple of days. But the PCR test that they did on Monday came back negative for all players. That is a good sign. USC was able to start workouts again today on Tuesday. Their normal schedule is a day push back, so they will do their normal Tuesday practice tomorrow on Wednesday. But so far, so good. But I think that there was kind of a lesson learned between last week and this week that even if you think you have a handle on things, COVID is going to have its way, whether or not you fully have an idea, you know? So they're holding their breath, and hopefully for USC's sake, this is the last of the positives and they can continue on and play on Sunday.
Nice. Good recap there, Keely.
It was a long one, so apologize.
It was long, but there was a lot of good stuff in there. And Clay Helton seemed, so we got to talk with him Tuesday morning. He seemed genuinely excited that the PCR test came back and they were negative. And that was a good sign that there wasn't some kind of other outbreak going on right now. And John Wilner wrote a little bit about this. I don't know if you saw Keeley, but he had talked to a Pac-12 source and thought that there was some false positives, which, you know, we've heard some rumblings of that. But he also heard there could have been a false negative, which if that's the case, then that's really tough, because then you have someone that's positive that could be spreading it an extra day. But he made it sound like the timing of it was really unlucky, that because of the travel day, you know, you get the day off on Sunday and it was a late game. Nobody was tested that day. If people were tested like post travel, it might have caught it a little earlier and then saved some of the other people from either getting it or going into quarantine. But they're tested, you know, 8 times a week, and the one day they have off is Sunday. So it's kind of tough to ask players to test again. But, you know, maybe he's right where do the quick test or whatever, the antigen test, rapid test after players, you know, finish traveling, and maybe that would solve that problem. But USC doesn't have to travel anymore, but just one of those things where could that have prevented it? Maybe, but it sounded interesting from what John Wilner was saying.
Yeah, so I was hearing the same thing, but I think USC kind of wanted to keep it under wraps. But since Wilner talked about it, I think I can speak about it a little more freely. But yeah, USC was dealing with false positives last week, and now they think that they also had false negatives. False negatives and false positives. So from a testing standpoint, they were kind of just trying to figure it out as the week went on, which just adds to the stress, because now you don't have a full confidence level of, okay, this person, did they test? They tested negative, but did they really? You know, this person tested positive. Did they really? So USC it was a stressful week for them on top of everything that you already thought was stressful for them, just because they didn't have a real sense at certain points of the week, especially in the beginning of the week. Okay, how did this person test this way? How do we go from here? You know, so I think that's part of the reason why, you know, I alluded to the kind of pessimism or the hesitation into this week rather than the optimism we were hearing last week. And I think that's just because the testing has been a hurdle for USC. And so I think that they're trying to be more cautious with where they go next and how they feel about their testing. So, I heard the same thing as Wilner, and it definitely made USC's life way more hectic trying to track everything down. And that's why, like, you have to give credit to USC. One, they've been very transparent throughout this whole process. And two, they were willing to pause right when they figured out that they had a positive on their hands. They believe in pausing to make sure you get a sense of everything and giving time for people to isolate and possibly stop the spread even more. Because you've seen with other college teams, it's like, oh, we have a positive and we just had a full contact practice where we were sweating and spitting on each other, you know? But USC kind of just hit the brakes pretty early on to make sure they got a better sense of things. And I think that definitely helped them, especially when you find out that their testing caused some hiccups along the way. So credit to them for being transparent. I know they're a private university and don't have to release all the positives and whatnot, but to their credit, they're doing that and they're trying to follow the guidelines as best as possible.
Yeah. And you want to give them props for being able to handle it this way. And, you know, I feel like the way USC's done it has been good. They haven't given away any sort of competitive advantage. They've talked about numbers of people. You know, we reported, you know, that the positives were on the offensive line. People have talked about that. But Clay Helton never said it. Clay Helton didn't say how many people were coming off quarantine and things like that. But he gave you the overall numbers. And I feel like that was it was a smart way to go, where there's other programs that aren't saying anything and you have no idea what's going on there. I think you can share what's happening without talking about the players' names, what positions they play, or anything like that. And that's pretty much what USC has done. And I think that's worked well.
Yeah, I mean, it's twofold. First off, it's HIPAA, so you can't disclose who tested positive just because of HIPAA, and whether or not the player wants to do it, that's up to them. But then on top of that, I think USC also wants to keep a competitive advantage. You know, we knew early in the week that an offensive lineman was the first positive, and so that caused an issue with quarantining. And I know USC, from a competitive advantage, didn't really want it out there that, hey, our entire offensive line might not be able to play against Colorado. So I know it's kind of twofold in that sense, Ryan, where I think Clay doesn't want Washington State now to be able to go, hey, this guy's going to be out, this guy, okay, let's double team this guy because he's never played a snap in his life at the college level, you know? So it's twofold, but from a reporting standpoint, I personally just don't want to say who tested positive because it's up to them, and, you know, and there's so much hate on the internet that the last thing you want is if you're COVID positive and dealing with that sickness, now you have to deal with internet hate because you canceled the game or something like that. It's just not worth it. And so that's my personal policy. And I think that's how USC is rolling as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. We also have some other news, Keely. Chase McGrath, USC's kicker, one of USC's kickers, is entered the transfer portal on Tuesday. So we thought he was going to be the starting kicker. We see Parker Lewis come in and has a really strong leg and has done well for the Trojans so far. And not unexpected that Chase McGrath would enter the portal. I don't know what you think about it or anything you've heard about that.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised just seeing how it's gone. You know, I am surprised because Chase has been so solid for USC that, you know, Helton tends to go more towards seniority, especially if it's a close race between two players. So I was kind of surprised that they went with Parker Lewis and stuck with it, you know, especially in the Arizona game when he was a little shaky, you know, but maybe that's the Sean Snyder effect. We don't know because we can't see practice. But I know from McGrath's side, I think it was a little surprising that it happened, especially because he was dealing with the injury. But it's always sad when you see a senior or an older veteran contributor get Wally Pipped in that sense. So, but congrats to Parker Lewis. I mean, he's been solid, and we were talking about him preseason as well. I think we even mentioned on the preview podcast, hey, what happens if Parker Lewis jumps over Chase McGrath and looks what happens? So, I mean, you want competition, and if Parker Lewis was indeed the better kicker throughout camp, then that's what you want as a Trojan fan because you want competition to win out. But you always hate it when guys who are you're used to seeing and who've been solid Trojans are ending up in the portal in that sense, you know?
Yeah, that was a tough one because, you know, he's really solid for USC for sure and, you know, been a hero at times. So we wish Chase McGrath the best. He's a great kid and hopefully everything works out for him. Why don't we only got like one question. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and we'll talk about some of the injuries and then we'll answer the question and maybe kind of wrap things up where we're going to go the rest of the week preparing in a little different way for a Sunday game. So back in a minute.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying.
What you want more?
It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Ryan Abraham, Keely Yore with you, giving you updates on the Trojan football team. And we want to talk about the injuries, Keely. The one thing going into the Colorado game, there was concern about the linebackers. And I think going into the Washington State game, there's still going to be concern about the linebackers.
Yeah, I feel like on instant analysis, every week I'm asking Shotgun, okay, Shotgun, are you concerned about the inside linebackers? And every week it's like, yes. I mean, you'd hope for USC's sake that Raylan Goforth and that foot sprain was able to heal more during the time off that they had. I think that for him is really beneficial. Clay Helton said that during today's like light practice slash workout that they're doing, they're going to test his foot to see if he can change direction, Raylan's foot, and see where he's at. But right now, that's really Raymond Scott and Kanai Mauga who are getting those reps. And then Pelletier Nwotuote is still in concussion protocol. And I actually asked Clay Helton about that this morning. And I was like, are you concerned at all about his recovery timeline? And he was like, these things take time. You always want to make sure that it's good from a neurological standpoint, a health standpoint, and just that the player feels good. And I completely agree. I'm not trying to be like, hey, come back. Why is EA not coming back faster? It's just it's been a while. He was injured against Arizona. So you just hope that EA is doing well and recovering well, just because he's also had this is not his first concussion. So hopefully that is you're not seeing any too many issues with that, because the brain is always a scary thing. And then as far as running backs, USC seems to be good. As far as that sounds like from Clay Helton, Marquise Stepp and Stephen Carr will be able to practice this week. So that is good. You just hope that Marquise Stepp can hold up health wise, because he's like dealing with three injuries simultaneously. He retweaked his ankle first day of training camp. While rehabbing that ankle, he had a foot sprain, kind of turf toe type deal, and then had a pec strain as well. So the injury point for Stepp is a little concerning at that point, because running backs have a shorter shelf life, and if you're injured a lot, it's just not great for USC. But Stepp is such a different and dynamic weapon for USC that it'll be good for USC not only to get Stepp but also Carr back, hopefully for Washington State, if that does indeed happen.
Yeah, we saw the the running backs. It was mostly Vavai, right, for in the game against Utah, because we didn't see Stephen Carr, and their production definitely dropped off. But I think it was just you're playing a much better defensive front in Utah. But I think the running backs are going to be okay for this one. The linebackers, like you said, we don't know. Even when Clay Helton was talking about Pelletier Nwotuote and the concussion protocol, he was saying sometimes it could take 21 days, sometimes it could take longer, and you just got a feeling that there might be something, wrong. Obviously concussions aren't good anyway. Any kind of brain injury is not great. Some go away quickly. This one doesn't seem like it is. So I think that, obviously the bigger area of concern is what are these inside linebackers going to do? Raylan Goforth and Kenai Mauga, they played really well, and they've kind of found what was missing from that position group, I think, against Utah. But having, only having like one of those guys available, I think would be a pretty big blow for the defense.
Yeah, and that was the interesting predicament before Raylan got hurt, was, okay, if EA comes back, what do you do? Because you saw such a better performance from the linebackers, the inside linebackers against Utah. What do you do with that? But that's not even a question right now. It's like, okay, can you get Raylan Goforth back? But I think the key there with both Kenai and Goforth was that Todd Orlando said, the first couple games, they just played so, the defense as a whole, played so just stiff, They played looser, they played faster, they were attacking. And it was kind of your theory, Ryan. I know on the podcast earlier you were like, even if they get in the wrong lane or if they do something wrong, as long as you're just going full speed and you're attacking, that's better than what they're doing now. And Todd Orlando kind of said something similar. He was like, we just need to attack and be faster and be looser. And I thought that's what they did against Utah. So I think that was the difference that we saw. And I think you can see that with Kenai especially. He just looked like he wasn't slow to read and react in that sense. So if you can get Raylan back, I think that helps that obviously that linebacker group. But you're curious what happens with Raymond Scott. I know he seemed to play pretty well against Arizona, but then he didn't get that much playing time against Utah. So what will he do in the spotlight, and whether or not Raylan Goforth will be 100%, all things to watch for on Sunday.
Yeah, I guess Todd Orlando listened to the show and just thought that my philosophy was good and went with it.
Makes he was sense. Like, that Ryan Abraham knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. I'm here for hire, coach, if you need me out there. not on the field, obviously. But, so that's good. It was good to see them playing fast. And you want to see that back. It's going to be a difficult week of practice. They've had to shut down, 7 of the last 9 days. So it was more conditioning today on Tuesday, and then get into full pads on Wednesday, getting ready for the Sunday game. It's just going to be a different way to prepare, but it's 2020. If guys are coming off quarantine on Saturday and you got to roll them out there to play, you make them play. And, Coach Clay Helton said that they're still doing their individual stuff to try to stay in shape. So even though they wouldn't be out on the practice field, you got to get back there. And that's, if you feel good about the running backs, concerned maybe about the linebackers, we know, you know, there's offensive linemen that have been affected by this. We don't know who's going to be out specifically and who's coming back off quarantine, but it's a problem, you know, kind of a problem group, I guess you could say already, Keeley. And now you might have one, two, three starters out. We don't know at this point. Any concerns there, you know, because of the COVID stuff? And even if guys are back, not having practice for a couple of weeks heading into this Washington State game.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned heading into this game. Like you said, Ryan, 7 out of the 9 days, the last couple of days, they haven't been able to practice. And so I'm curious what Helton meant when he said the quarantine guys were still working out on their own. Like, do they have equipment in the rooms? Are they, like, running in open fields away from everybody? What does that look like? But, you know, the guys who would be coming back, I assume they are more veteran guys. So hopefully they just got extended rest and can kind of pick up where they are. But as far as the younger guys, Helton said, you know, they're slimming down what they can do because they know that they don't want to overload the newer players who will probably get more playing time on Sunday. You know, you just hope that that they get it and they're not overwhelmed. We heard a lot of praise about, you know, the Cortland Fords of the world, the Jonah Monheims, if those are the guys that step up and have to play. We'll see if USC's praise of them was correct. We've had a mixed bag so far of the USC preseason praise, so we'll see where that lines up. But if you're Graham Harrell, what do you do with the playbook? You just try to get the ball out faster, so that way you don't put too much pressure on your offensive linemen to really to be stout in that sense. I don't know. You know, it will be. I think you have to kind of grade on a curve whatever you see on Sunday. You know, Helton said they've been two spotting. They've been preparing for this basically all 2020. And this is where the rubber meets the road. How flexible can you be? How well can you prepare when you don't really know who you're going to get or how your team is going to look? So, and Helton, I think, said even today, they don't even have enough people to really do full service team. Like, the ones and twos are going to have to give scout looks to their opposite ones and twos. So Keen Slovis might be acting like Washington State for a bit on practice Wednesday and Thursday. So it's just it's a really 2020 week, 2020 game. It's whatever works. And honestly, Clay Helton said, we're just happy to be on the grass and to play, you know? And so I think that's what you have to take at this point. They're at least going to try to play on Sunday, and when they can and if they can, you just have to enjoy it because it's college football in 2020.
100% agree. And we talked about this on Tunnel Vision Sunday night, and people are asking about excuses. Like, look, I think Clay Hall's attitude is the right one. You just have to be thankful that your feet are on grass and there's a pigskin and other people out there wearing pads and running around. You're doing what you love to do. Is it an ideal situation? No. Are you going to do things differently? Are these coaches and players creatures of habit? Yes, all of those things. But, you know, we've seen Cal and UCLA play on 2 days' notice. Like, hey, what, you guys go play each other. We've seen Utah and Washington have to do that, a few days more notice. Like, you just have to do these things. At least you know who your opponent is. You can't prepare exactly the way you would like, but you get to prepare. You're going to play on a different day, different time. It's moved a couple of times. We've seen that the Steelers and Ravens, they've moved their game like 3 different times in the NFL. And is that fair for everyone? You know, over that time, they've moved games, people catch the virus and then they end up being out, but that wouldn't have mattered if they played it earlier. Like, yeah, there's all kinds of excuses sort of built in. You might have a bunch of disadvantages that you shouldn't have in a normal year, but I don't think any of that matters, Keely. You just have to go and be thankful you're playing and play whatever hand you're dealt. Play those cards, and it might be crappy. It might be better than you thought. I mean, USC got some breaks, playing 3 teams that had not played before. Missing Colorado actually was a benefit to making the Pac-12 championship game because you basically now have a guaranteed tiebreaker with the Buffs that you wouldn't have had if you lost, but you would have had to beat Colorado. Now just not playing them is almost like you beat them. So there's going to be advantages and disadvantages. You got to throw yourselves in this game and figure it out and just play. You have the more talented players, play your game and win. And I think that's what USC has to do. So for those fans out there, they're looking for excuses. I just don't think anyone can have excuses. Yes, it's a weird year. You just have to kind of roll with it and go.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. This is when you have to have the reality check. Hey, it's college football in a pandemic. It is what it is. And I know I'm guilty of that too, being overcritical. But, you know, they're playing. They're going to try to play. And it's better than last week when they didn't play. So that's all you can really ask for as a fan, I guess.
Yeah. We only have one question this week. We'll get to that in a second. But we're going to do our television show. We didn't do one last week on Wednesday because it was, you know, Thanksgiving and all that. We didn't realize there wasn't going to be a game, but that will be our preview show for Washington State. So make sure you check that out. We'll put the podcast up on our podcast feed as well. If you're listening there, all kinds of stuff will be going up on uscfootball.com, previewing the game and all of that this week. So hopefully you can tune in to all of that. But yeah, anything else, Keely, before we jump into the question?
No, I mean, just hoping that all the guys who tested positive for COVID are doing well and recovering well. That's the main thing. I know it's we get lost in the game and the all that stuff, but hopefully they're doing well and that no more positives pop up for USC in that sense.
Yeah, so you know, you want everyone to be healthy. It was funny. I think you asked Clay Helton about any of the staff, and he sort of like, yeah, that was weird. Maybe to explain what he said or what you asked and what he said and what you think about it.
I don't even fully understand what he said at this point. I need to recheck the transcript, which I'm doing right now. But he had said multiple times, because they did the PCR test on Monday, he said multiple times, no player tested positive. And I was like, that begs the question. So then I asked, I was like, you keep saying no player tested positive. Has your staff or has anyone on your staff been affected by COVID-19? And it was kind of this roundabout, like no one in the building tested positive. It is a curious thing that got my reporter senses tingling. So if I find anything out, I will let y'all know. But it was odd, Ryan.
It was strange. The feeling I got was this latest round of testing, nobody was positive. Like everybody was negative in the building. Right. Everyone was negative in the building.
So I found the quote. He says, as of right now, everybody that is in the building has tested negative. We really haven't had to report staffers, just on players. I'll leave that to the athletic administrators.
Yeah,
but I can tell you that everybody that's in the building today is negative. We don't know who was in the building.
Yeah, like could a staff member have tested positive and not been in the building? Mm-hmm. You know, my feeling was it's basically like everyone that was working there on the football team was negative. Like they all tested, they're all negative. But was somebody out last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever? Like sounds like it, yes. But he's just not going to say. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Quote unquote have to say. I mean, he doesn't technically have to say anything. But yeah, that's the feeling I got, Keely, was no one's positive now. The whole staff is fine. But yes, we had some people on staff that tested positive or weren't quarantined because of it. So who knows? And it's hard when you're not going to practice. Like if we would go to practice, we could see Vic Soto's not there. Wonder where he is, you know. You can notice things like that. And now, you know, that's not the case.
Yeah. So, cause I said, I was like, you don't have to get into specifics, but has it affected your staff at all? And so it didn't seem like he wanted to get into it, which is fair. You don't have to. But I just thought it was curious how he kept saying no player tested positive. So I was like, interesting, intriguing on that front.
Exactly. All right. Well, you want to get to our final question?
Sure. Let's go to our question from Jim B, who wants to talk about recruiting. He says, hey guys, great show. Keep up the good work. At the start of the recruiting season, SC had gotten a lot of new coaches who were also good recruiters. Everything looked good. I think we were number 4 at one time in the national recruiting team ranking. Since then, we have gone steadily downhill. We are now number 10 and falling fast. Meanwhile, we have lost some key guys that we were pursuing, like Aaron Armitage, Ethan Calvert, Nathaniel Wiggins, and Philip Riley. What is going on with recruiting, and where do you think that we will finish in the final national recruiting team rankings? Fine on, Jim B.
Hey, Jim. So I think Steve Whitfong did a pretty good piece up on the website. We don't usually get into the recruiting stuff too in depth here on the podcast, but if you want to check out Whitfong's article up on uscfootball.com, it went up on Monday, November 30th, but they picked up Crying Ware Hudson, who's a four-star receiver from Modern Day High School, flipped him from Oregon to USC. And his brother is actually on the Oregon Ducks team. So it was pretty good. And that moved USC up to number seven, nationally. So that's a nice jump. There's a bunch of guys that, you know, USC is working on. And he kind of goes through a lot of them, just like what would be the ideal way to finish the class. Corey Foreman is the five-star defensive lineman. He's the number one player in the country. So he likes USC, likes Arizona State, Clemson, Georgia, LSU. He was a Georgia commit before. It seems like still of a fluid situation, but there's other guys like Sierra Wright, and Rayshon Davis and, the quarterback situation. They have Jake Garcia and Miller Moss, but they could push for Jackson Dart as well. So there's a bunch of dudes that still after and can, you know, the potential to finish really strong in this class is certainly there, and that was, big move, taking a guy away from Oregon and bringing over to USC. So we'll see how strong they finish. I think it's part of it going to be tied to how they play and how good they look on the field. That's certainly going to help. It's not like individual games, like USC loses to Washington State and a player goes to Washington State instead of USC. It doesn't work that way. But just, do they look good? Do they look like they're a real team out there and they win the South? And do they win the Pac-12? I think all those things help. But it's a crazy schedule because you got the early signing period, third week in December, basically right after the season's going to end. You're finishing off your weekend December 18th or 17th if you're going to play in the championship game. I believe it's 18th, 19th. I forget which exactly it is. But, yeah, it's going to depend on how USC finishes and then how strong they can close this class out. There's a lot of big fish there that they're going to try to reel in, and we'll see how they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy realizing that the early signing period is so close. That's just how weird the schedule in this year has been. But the Chiron flip was huge because not only did that move USC up to number seven in the national rankings, it dropped Oregon to number five. So the race for the number one in the Pac-12 recruiting rankings is still on. It's not over. And Oregon lost to Oregon State, so that obviously is not great. And then you have USC still battling and undefeated right now, and whether or not they close out the season, we'll see. But how they do there. But it'll be interesting, Ryan, and especially with the pandemic. I know that was big in I know Greg Biggins put out an article about Ware Hudson's commitment, and his dad talked about how the pandemic really affected his situation and how he felt about leaving, and so he wanted to stay and go to USC. So how that affects things going forward and how it has affected things, just keep your eyes open for that, because that's interesting wrinkle as well.
All righty, good stuff, Keely Yore. Thanks for joining us today and all the great insight. You've been doing an awesome job, and breaking news on our live television show. That doesn't happen all the time, so congrats on doing that. And
Thank you. It was hard doing all of that at once, producing, trying to hold a conversation with you guys, and texting like four separate people at the same time. It was not my best tunnel vision, but I was like, you know what? We're breaking news, and it's going to be what it is.
I had a bird's eye view. Just, I was looking, like Keely's basically looking straight ahead, where I'm in the seat I am in right now, looking ahead into a camera. I'm facing her like at 90 degrees. So she's facing the wall and into the camera and the lights, and I'm looking right at Keely. So when I'm looking straight ahead, but the camera's pointing, from Keely's point of view. So I could see her going to her phone and doing all the stuff. It was pretty funny to see her, like what she was doing, smiling and like trying to figure this out. So it was fun. I get to watch you in action.
Oh, thank you. You did a great job stalling. I think there were a couple times you saw me like trying to like get back to the producing desk and just being like, and you were like, and so, and I was like, thank you, Ryan. So you were a good teammate in that sense.
We tried. Yeah, we did. Well, great stuff. And everyone out there, thank you so much for being part of the show and listening and telling your friends and all of that. We really do appreciate that. It's awesome having all the feedback we get and all the, when we used to see people on the street and they would come up to us and say something about the podcast, that doesn't happen anymore because we're not out there. But, hopefully we'll get back to that point at some point. But hope you guys enjoy this weekend of college football, cross your fingers at USC and Washington State happen on Sunday night. For Keely Yore, I am Ryan. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.